And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Good evening. You are tuned in to Tando Radio Show on the Black Talk Radio Network. Today is September 29th, 2017, on this Friday afternoon, or this Friday evening as we head into the weekend. Dave is not here with us now, but he'll be joining us a little bit later on, but he will be doing a program today. He has some business he has to take care of that is pushing him past the start of his radio program, Tando Radio Show. But today's topic will be in desperation. The system wants us to turn on each other via Red Room. So Dave will be joining us here in just about 30 minutes. But in the meantime, there is a video that he wanted to share the audio portion of it with you. And this particular video is referring to the financial markets. It's a video by Gordon Long, and it says markets are in delusional phase. Investor Gordon Long says the stock market hitting one all-time high after another, despite all the economic headwinds, shows the public is in a delusional phase. The latest nuclear war threat from North Korea shows the extreme delusion going on, and Long contends this is about as clear of an example as you are going to get. This is more serious than the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the fact the market has not even blinked during this tells you we no longer know how to price risk. It's not being priced correctly. It's almost pure speculation at this point, and maybe straight out gambling. When is it all going to come crashing down? Long predicts. I think there is a scare coming this fall that will scare. The scare will allow central banks to start more quantitative easing and other programs. They will be guaranteeing the markets and guaranteeing assets because they can't have this pension system collapse, and it's all in the stock market. I think we are talking about the spring of next year when it all totally implodes. So Greg Hunter is going one-on-one with investor Gordon Long, who is the founder of MATASII.com. So we're going to start that up for you. Again, Dave will be joining us after the video.
I'm Greg Hunter. Welcome to USAWatchdog.com. With us, a guest I had on a few years ago. Everybody loved him. The only reason why I didn't have him back, I just had an embarrassment of bookings, but he's great. And let me give you a little build up to him first off. He is an expert in tech. He was in tech management in high-level positions, had his own company, sold it for a mint. He is expert on investing and finance. He used to, before he had his own company, he worked, he was an exec, high exec at IBM and Motorola. He also has macro analytics and technical analysis, strategic investment insights. I'll give that again. Macro analytics and technical analysis, strategic investment insights. He calls it Matsui. It's Matsui.com. And I'm talking about Gordon Long. Gordon Long, thank you for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Well, thank you for having me. That's a mouthful. We just say it's Matsui.
Okay, that's fine. And you are
no Japanese in that either.
Yeah, you are a private investor. I mean, you made a mint off starting and selling your own company. So you don't want people to call you up for investment stuff.
Yeah, I'm at the stage. I just manage my own money. Though I did private equity and venture capital after I sold my position. So no. So I don't phone me. All our ideas are put at Matsui.
Well, that's great, because you don't have any dog. You have nothing to sell. You have no dog in the fight. So just thank you for donating your time to this. I want to start, and I'm going to put myself up here because I want people to read the quote full. It's your quote. It says, you could call it a financialization, creditism, a fascism, a muted form of socialism, or whatever, but you can no longer call our economic system capitalism. You can't call what we have now capitalism. I heard the president of Venezuela say that, capitalism doesn't work. Well, yeah, but we don't have it here. So okay, will you explain that to us?
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. Capitalism works, and it works extremely well. But basically, we've crippled capitalism, and have for some time. First of all, you have to understand what capitalism is. It's about companies investing their savings, called profits, into productive assets, which in turn create savings or profits that are reinvested. That reinvestment then improves productivity, which then leads to higher standards of living. That's not what's happening today, and it hasn't for some time, and it's been a slowly gradual shift as we've financialized our economy. And by that, what we're doing now is we create, through credit, we're creating consumption. And consumption is exactly that, consumption. It's not wealth creation, it's expenditure. So you're bleeding the investment capital out of your system. And we're in the United States, a 70% consumption economy. We have trapped ourselves by going that route. And we went that route beginning when we got off the basics of sound money, that is a fiat currency, and it's slowly been accelerating. And in 2000, it was starting to really move, and it actually really crippled in 2008. But we're back on track again. And the exponential growth of credit. And credit today is what's driving growth, is what drives economic growth. Liquidity flows are what's driving asset price direction, and there's a difference. And both of those are now being controlled more and more by the government or the central banks, and as such, that's the problem. You can't have capitalism in a controlled economy. We have something else. My friend Richard Duncan at MacroWatch, he actually calls it creditism, and I think that's pretty good. My friend Charles Hugh Smith, he calls it financialization, whatever you want to call it, but it's not capitalism.
Oh, wow, what could go wrong? I wanted to get this, and I do want to ask you what could go wrong, and it's just another quote. I want to get this in here because I just find it very interesting. This is an unbelievable statistic. Debt today now consumes most of the productive capital being created. I'm thinking, whoa! That is, what happens when everybody turns out like over Puerto Rico and can't pay the debt? What happens then?
And it's coming. And it is, and that's not an exaggeration. And just there's quite a ways of proving it, but not just quick and a back of an envelope. We have $220 trillion of debt in the globe. Let's assume that debt is around 4%. Some of it's historical, some of it's much less right now, but 4%. 4%, 220, we got north of $8 trillion, right, of debt payments. The total global economy, $72 trillion. It's running about 1.8% growth rate. Let's round it up to 3%, double it, almost triple it. So at 3% of 72, we got just over $2 trillion, 2 from 8 is 6. See the problem? And you can't quite do it that way, but it's close enough. So we're not only not creating any more capital, real wealth, we're consuming it. There's no money left to invest, and the only way you could keep it going is you got to print more money. And that will only work if you have a fiat currency. Before, we couldn't do it. So that's why I look at almost any chart, it's going exponential. The more you do, the more you have to do, because you lose the cap, the debt creates less growth. It falls off. The propensity of growth falls off, and that's what we're in. It's that simple. This is arithmetic, not rocket science.
And you can do that when you print a currency. Some people think that you can do this forever, and you can't. You do it until your currency dies, right?
You do it until nobody will take the money, and that's the trick of this whole thing. And so, first of all, you have to understand that 95% of the world's currencies are four currencies: the pound, the euro, the dollar, and the yen. All four of those are the ones debasing their currency at a phenomenal rate, and they do beggar thy neighbor. Bernanke came in, or he actually called it enrich thy neighbor, and that is you go around in a circular fashion so that you really can't see where the debasement's happening. Typically, the debasement's obvious. Gold and silver goes through the roof. Well, many people will argue that that's a manipulated market. But I do know this, that Lawrence Summers was an obscure former Treasury Secretary, was an obscure professor at Harvard University, when he wrote about the Gibson Paradox, which is in the relationship between interest rates and gold, and how you had to control the gold money to control the interest rates. And he was plucked out of Harvard and made the Secretary of Treasury, and it's about that time these sort of things started happening. There's a lot of thought has went in to how to control this, and that's what's happening. And the reason stocks go up, are going up, besides the fact we're printing $300 trillion a month, that is primarily the ECB and the Bank of Japan, is that money's actually falling. It takes more money to buy those stocks, except you have no way of measuring it today. There are ways, but most people can't see it.
And some people are under the false impression that you can just keep growing the stock market, creating the debt, buying the stocks, and you can do that indefinitely, and the gold market will be suppressed, and the silver market will be suppressed indefinitely. Is that true?
No, it's not true, but it will go on for a further period of time. We're imminently going to see some very scary moments, because it's again getting very unstable when you look at high leverage loans, when you look at covenant lights, almost any measurement, because the credit market wants to roll over, the business cycle's rolling over. We haven't seen a recession in 8 years. These are all natural processes. I believe, as we see some fear, this whole concept of normalization and quantitative tightening that the banks are proposing is just ridiculous. They're not going to follow through on it, even if they believe it. The moment we have fear, they'll be back printing, and we'll have quantitative easing 4, or they'll call it something else. But we will be pumping more money. These balance sheets of the central banks will continue to explode as long as they can control that currency.
So basically what you're saying is that, hey, folks, gold and silver is cheap. At some point, that will revaluate to that will snap back to the real value that it should be relative to the massively printed currency. Am I correct on saying that?
You're correct, and that's the right word too. Is it won't be something that's gradual. It'll be very abrupt. It'll be the system will break, and it's at that point. And James Rickards talks about it, and he's got his hands around it pretty well. That he calls it the big freeze. And the financial markets will freeze up. And when they come out of the other end of that freeze, and it may be a numbers of weeks, because the next crisis will be global and much more complex than 2008 was, where we could control it by the Federal Reserve and various 12 facilities we came out. This one you can't do, and you can't get agreement with all those countries, ever mind understanding the complexity. So when we come out of the other side, reminds me of Apollo 13 went around the moon. And if you recall, we were all, as a nation, frozen to find out whether they were going to be all right when they came out of the other side of the moon. We'll be in that frozen state. But when we do come out, there will be a massive revaluation in the U.S. dollar.
For everything.
Everything and everything.
But I mean, hold on, I'm going to interrupt. I'm so sorry. So we could go into this freeze and gold's $1,300 or $1,400 an ounce. And when we go around the dark side of the moon and come out and they unfreeze it, gold might be $5,000 or $10,000 or who knows.
That's the level.
Oh, you think it's going to be that huge?
If they choose to have an element of gold in it, because what they have to do, it's not about gold or silver. they've got to put some stability into the monetary system, and the only way they can do it is having something they just can't print, because that's what's got us in this problem. We have to get back to sound money. Some element of it will be gold, will have to be gold. It's the only way countries will agree. What percentage will determine what the value of that gold will be, and more importantly, the degree of which the U.S. dollar will devalue. Personally, I think it will be well over 70% devaluation in the U.S. dollar.
That's what it was in 1933.
But that doesn't mean the world's coming to an end. It just means you've got to go through this to reset. Those who prepare and understand why this is happening and watch for the signals, there's going to be fortunes transferred, as there are being right now, frankly, during this event and after the event. But if you're sitting on gold, it'll be just bingo, and it's all the way up. Now, remember, with another big caveat, expect the government to tax it like you have never seen before.
Well, of course, you know, then you also, I'd rather pay a tax than write down a big giant loss on my tax form, right?
You're better off worrying about that problem, aren't you?
That's right. And you know, I want to get to this right here, and this is, just comes into you, what you're talking about, that it's imminent, but not right this minute. And you were telling me in the pre-interview, you said, well, we're going to get a scare, and that's going to cause them to go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs with the QE4, money printing, bond buying, whatever. And I wanted to show you your chart here. I'm going to go full screen here to show. Here is, let's just start right here. This is the 2008 crash. And here we are. Oh, boy, my goodness. Gone way up. And here we have, it's a delusion that you have circled here. We are here. This was in August of this year. And I guess that delusion has gone up a little higher. We're close to some kind of hiccup, some kind of scare. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we are. Everything's so complex, and so many areas are now breaking down. I mentioned the credit cycle. I mentioned the potentials for recession. What we're seeing with just the basic price discovery, assessing of risk, et cetera. So something will break in here. There will be a fairly serious scare, but that's not a crash is what I'm talking about. But it will be, and I'll use the word, an excuse for the central banks to reapply more money that will be spent.
We're going to get this big downturn. We're going to get some kind of scare, but instead of the chart going down, it'll go up and then do this big, long big long downturn. This is emotion. This is sentiment, though. The sentiment will crash eventually.
Yeah, and sentiment will take it down. If you look at long-term sentiment charts right now, just pure sentiment, whether the University of Michigan or Consumer Sentiment, you'll see a massive head and shoulders. And the regression matches the GDP globally that's also falling. So, and the reason I bring it up is if you look at that head and shoulders from the neckline on those measurements, and I post it all the time at Matsui, that is a massive readjustment in sentiment and mood. And that's what will really take this market, never mind just a normal financial crisis. But I actually see maybe the first scare this fall, but I think the market still has new highs to be made as we go into next year, into the spring. You've got a gun to your head right now.
But not because of any fundamentals. Because no. Everybody will say, okay, do something, and they'll do it on their way to completely hyperinflating the dollar.
Actually, what we will see is we're going to see real deflation, hyperinflation, and the hyperinflation will come because of the value of the dollar will drop. Hyperinflation, Greg, as you well know, it's not about what you think price of the store. It has to do with a lack of faith in the currency. So when currencies collapse, that's when you get hyperinflation. Your currency won't buy anything. And out of 52 examples of hyperinflation we've had historically, they've all been because of the currency. So it'll be a U.S. lack of trust in the U.S. dollar. Big caveat here. When the fear strikes, right now, the flight to safety will be to the U.S. dollar initially. And that's what will drive the market and the rebound in the market, or holding it up, because of the money will be accepted. But very quickly after that, the dollar itself will collapse. It'll be the last to collapse.
Yeah, we're talking about some kind of a wild yo-yo, not even a roller coaster, just a, you know, boing, boing, boing. We're talking about something like that you foresee coming.
Precisely. You'll call it mass instability like you've never seen before. So everybody will lose if you're trying to hedge in various products or through the freeze. There'll be very few winners if you're in the if you're playing the financial markets. Your timing will be everything. And remember, everything's working now at computer speeds. Everything's computer-driven trading, et cetera. It's going to be very tough for the average person to survive with their wealth through it if they choose to really try and play the game in the short term. Sometimes it's better to just buy insurance and set aside. The last 5%, lowest bottom 5% are often the most expensive.
And
so sometimes it's just better to take it, make sure it's well secured, make sure you've got your gold, your silver, you've got cash, and let me say that again, you've got cash, and assets that will stand that. You know, not all assets are just traded on the stock market. There's a lot of assets that will survive. My grandfather made his money during the Great Depression. He said that was the best time he ever had.
Farm ground, a house title, a car title, new tires on your car, a good battery. I mean, you should have stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Precisely. Real stuff, not digital representations of your wealth that is real right now. But with the amount of third-party risk, and especially with, and I could get a whole discussion of ETFs, right now, it's going to be really questionable whether people can the fiduciaries will be able to deliver. You can sue, but they're going to be broke.
I want to come back to this delusional phase here. We're delusional. This is in August. We got to be closer to the top because we sure have. I mean, we got all-time highs in stock prices. We got some places having all-time highs in real estate prices. Other data on real estate shows it's showing off and selling off in many other markets. Then you add in, the crazyville of North Korea saying they're going to let off a nuke in the Pacific Ocean, and the United States has declared an act of war on North Korea, and the president calling him a little rocket man, and just doesn't sound good to me. And yet the stock market is at all-time highs. Is that fairly buttress your claim that we are in the delusional phase in the markets? I mean, this should be all selling off hard.
It's about as clear an example as you're going to get. For those of us who were alive and following closely during the Cuban Missile Crisis and what was going on with the markets and the fear, and this is more serious in my mind. I'm not trying to say what will be the outcome, but the fact the market has not even blinked during this tells you that we no longer know how to price risk. It's not being priced correctly, and we have a lack of price discovery. So the markets themselves have really mutated into something that is not a free market in terms of really assessing value and as an investment of what you'll get on your return. It's almost pure speculation at this point, maybe even bordering on straight out gambling. So, you know, play black six and roll the wheel. That's what we've come to with this level of financialization. And there's a reason for that, and that gets into the buybacks and how the money is being plowed back into stocks. You know, Greg, we were saying earlier before the show that, you know, over the last 10 years, the S&P 500 has paid shareholders more in terms of share buybacks and dividends, more money than they made. More money than they made in the S&P 500 over the last 10 years. 72% of U.S. companies are not making money. Now, granted, a large number of those are small business being forced out with online and chains and et cetera, but they're not making a profit. 9% of all European companies their interest expense is larger than their income. These are examples of zombie corporations. How can profits be higher? They're not. How can stock prices be higher? They are. Any valuations tell you they're absurd. So you have to understand how they're holding those stocks up. And it's complicated, but it is relatively straightforward.
They're holding it up with debt. I mean, basically.
Yeah, let me explain it. What they're doing right now is they're borrowing money. That is, borrowing it through their bonds, and now they're using other instruments. But they borrow them. They float the bonds. They take the money from the bonds, and they buy back their stocks. Fewer stocks, less earnings, but you're dividing the denominators a bigger number. So all of a sudden, your earnings per share are a smaller number. Your earnings per share are up, but your earnings are down. More important, and everybody sort of understands, more importantly, when you have fewer shares, you pay out less dividends in total, cumulatively. And the game today is a global yield chase. So what you want is you want your yield to be increasing, even at 2.5% and negative interest rates around the world. The world wants these dividend-paying stocks at 1.75%, 2%, 2.5%. So what you want to do is you want to take the borrowed money, buy the dividends, and increase it a little bit more with even fewer numbers of shares. The yield becomes quite attractive. And I'll speculate here for a moment, Greg, and it's just me speculating. I say, who's buying the bonds? Okay, what's going on here? Well, I look at $1.3 trillion offshore of corporate money, $181 billion at Apple.
Yeah, here you go. I'm holding up the your chart here. You have it as unrepatriated offshore money. There's your Apple, $181, the GE, $119, Microsoft, $108 billion, Pfizer, $74 billion, IBM. And, you know, there's a lot of cash out there. You're saying it's not just sitting there.
Are you really going to sit on $1.3 trillion of corporations in total? You're going to do something. What can you do with it? Interest rates outside of the United States on bonds are negative. So you say, well, I'm going to hold it at a financial institution. You pay them to hold the money. There's a fee now. You don't get interest on it. So you're going to go invest in another company, and a company? Where are you going to put the money? You're what? If I was the CEO, I would have it structured like Enron, not like Enron, but tools that we saw during the Enron. I would have an offshore investment entity, arm's length, that would then buy my bonds. I would use that money to do the exercise I said with the dividends, etc. Then remember, bondholders are paid before any profit is paid. So you got to pay the bondholders and goes back into my other account. This is like the spin cycle. This is an opportunity just to completely print money.
The CEO, the people at the top of the company are the bondholders.
Exactly.
So, wow, what could go wrong with this?
Cheers.
What could go wrong with that? What could go wrong with all this buying back and using your own money and all that? This is all the money that Trump wants to bring in from overseas. What could go wrong with that?
Actually, that's one of the... Well, two things can go wrong. One, their cash flow is getting down lower. They don't have positive cash flow, and the EBITDA is draining off, so that means their bond ratings are going up. So that's making it a little bit trickier. But the bigger one is, I applaud Trump for the policy of repatriating that money. What he doesn't seem to appreciate is, do you think the money's sitting there waiting to come home? It's busy. He needs to ask himself, what's it busy doing? Because no matter what it's doing, there's a ramifications of pulling it home.
Which would be a sell-off in the stock market.
Well, it's my opinion, and it's not sitting offshore. That's my personal opinion.
And I wanted to... Because
I wouldn't be buying those bonds with my money.
You're buying it with company money.
As CEO, I would, because it's free money.
Yeah. Got it. And, this thing with gold, with Rickards in gold, you're saying that, you know, according to your chart, and I keep coming back to this delusional thing, you were telling me in the pre-interview, you know, we're close. I mean, this is sending a signal, and whether it's North Korea or all-time highs in stock market or bizarre prices in real estate, and even the Puerto Ricos of the world who, you know, everybody thought they were cool beans when they defaulted on the $74 billion until this hurricane hit, and they need to borrow money. And now you see what this is like, Mad Maxville, no power for the next 3 to 6 months. It's unbelievable, but I digress. You're saying...
No, actually, you're really on to something very important there.
Okay.
Greg, if you just don't mind me.
Go ahead.
We say in the United States we have a $20 trillion debt. We do not have a $20 trillion debt. We have an $84 trillion debt based on unfunded liabilities and the baby boomers retiring and that big giant Ponzi scheme coming due.
And you're saying right now, right? Not in the future. We have $84 trillion really we're on the hook for right now.
Yeah, we've just went across the cusp. We're now paying out more than is coming in. And that's going to accelerate every single day as it builds up. But the bigger, even bigger problem, if that isn't a nightmare, and remember, we've got to print money. That means people got to take it and go back to our previous discussion, is we actually, the debt, it's called the fiscal gap, is $210 trillion. And this gets back to your comment on Puerto Rico. Because what we do in Puerto Rico, when they defaulted, we, the government, guarantee, we don't lend the money. The banks lend the money, by the way, at obscene rates. And they have no risk because we guarantee it. If they default, we pay the banks. So, but we're on the nut for the guarantees. It's called contingent liabilities. We have $210 trillion. So if we have a hurricane, Puerto Rico doesn't have the money. We've effectively got a guarantee that loan that they're defaulting on and any other more money. If the global economy slows down, which it is beginning to and quite steadily, and it slows down by, I don't know, just a couple percent on that a number, and we get defaults on that, even 2% defaults is $4 trillion. We can't handle that. That's how tight this tightrope is right now.
Wow.
And, So you say when
that is a small window of error.
It's a snowflake on an avalanche. You don't know which one's going to go. You will never know exactly what the complexity's there. No room for error. So I think when it happens, they've still got tools to at least try and keep this thing inflated. But I'm not sure how long it will go on. The best way of thinking of it, it's like you have a balloon and they're pumping in the balloon, but there's a hole in the balloon. So the hole, they have to keep pumping harder because the hole in the balloon, but it keeps ripping. So you pump harder, but the rip gets bigger. You can keep doing that, but suddenly all the air starts gushing out of the rip. You don't know at what point that rip just became large enough that the air is going straight out. That's the point we're at. There's a rip in the balloon. We're pumping faster. And will they be able to put a patch on it to buy more time, but they won't be able to fix the rip.
And you said, so when you ask yourself, I thought you were going to say, when you ask how soon is this coming, and you were going to answer, I interrupted you. I think that's where you were going. So how soon is this coming? What do you think your roadmap for the next 3 to 6 months?
I think there's a scare coming this fall. I think that in that scare might be a little longer. But that scare will allow the central banks to move to quantitative four and other programs, helicopter money. They will be in guaranteeing the markets, guaranteeing assets, because they can't have this pension system collapse and it's all in the stock market, maybe a little bit, but not much. I think that probably we're talking about the spring of next year, but they may be lucky. They may be able to get it a little longer. But you're playing. You basically have a gun to your head right now.
It's
no longer a market.
When you say spring of next year, you're talking about consumer confidence on a plunge next year.
Yes.
You're talking about something that, you know, maybe a couple of thousand points off the market. I mean, we're at 25. I mean, at the S&P is what, at 2,500. I mean, the market's at, very high, a few thousand points, 3,000 points off this market is 3,000 points when it was 10,000. You're saying a scare is going to...
1986, we had 20%.
That's right. But you're saying that The scare is going to be something significant. It's going to be an oh my goodness moment.
The scare that will allow the central banks to go to the next stage. Remember, we brought Stanley Fisher in as the co-chair of the Federal Reserve for 2 years. He just stepped down here the other day. Now, one of the most brilliant minds in the world, and you haven't heard a thing out of him. What was his job was financial stability of the markets. So what did he do for the last 2 years? Well, I can assure you that he's been busy worrying about problems like this.
You think that him stepping down is another ding, 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 the bell's ringing at the top of the... Do you think that's a sign that he's up all of a sudden, boom, I'm gone, without any fanfare at all? No cake, no candles, no goodbye party, no gold watch, just boom, I'm out. Bye-bye.
And not because he's fleeing that way. I think he knows what's coming and what it means, and he's just looking at it, he says, my health can't handle that. 24/7 global coordination, it'll take a... And he just said, I you need somebody in here who can handle that. That's my personal speculation, but him stepping down is profound. He is one of the best minds in the world, and they brought him in as co-chair.
And this isn't doomed.
By the way, he was a professor for Bernanke and everybody, for a lot of them.
And this is not doom and gloom. This is point. This is a math problem. You're saying to be forewarned is to be forearmed. Yeah, exactly. Don't believe the happy talk about happy days and it's going to go up to the moon, Alice. We're going to be at 40. It's going to double from here, the stock market. You're saying that you're saying the signs are all there. The bell's ringing, and the rats are running. But you're saying that we're getting close to the end. A math problem, a mathematical endpoint.
We're actually kind of part of it in it, and it depends how you measure it. And Matsui, we do have strategic insights. We have 8 of them, and the returns are significant. But what a lot of them are is we're on the short side of the market. We have this capital destruction at phenomenal rates. But what's happening is the main indexes are, because of the FANG and NOSH stocks and, you know, Amazon, Facebook, et cetera, are holding it up, and they mirror, as many of our listeners have seen, the central bank's printing machines. But underneath it, if you get into other areas, it's collapsing. One of them that everybody should be aware of is what's happening with U.S. retail space.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I don't think people fully grasp the magnitude. 10,000 stores are shutting down this year. What's happening with the chains? And we've been on this, for example, just to show you where the money is being made or sucked out of the market right now. We got in it and believed that the department store model was completely broken. Sears and Macy's and all of them were falling as we went down with them. But then we said, this is going to kill the malls, because they're the cornerstone of all of these malls. And then we see malls, our studies say, and others we talked to, 1,400 malls in America is going to 310 to 400 will be shut down next 24 months. So that's collapsing. But then you look at all of the retailers in there.
Toys R Us. Toys R Us is the third or fourth.
Based on malls, especially women's apparels. And these stocks, which are down from 180 to 70, I have troubles figuring out whether they're worth 10. So, and trying to give you an example of the capital destruction that's going on, but it's getting, Toys R Us went broke and this went broke, but every day.
And it's not just everything's going to online. Toys R Us had ToysRUs.com. All these companies have an online presence. It's not like, duh. I mean, you know, they all have online, which is mail order on the internet. I mean, you know. So they all, it's like, it can't just be Amazon's killing all these companies. I'm sure they're killing some, but not all of them.
A lot of them are getting Amazon, no question, but that's not really what it is. You said Toys R Us. Why did they suddenly go broke? Have you looked at the debt that they had on their books?
And look, and they went broke before Christmas.
They got the debt, and it isn't because they were bad management. The takeovers load the books up with the debt. You know, right now in America, over 65% of the S&P are either owned or controlled by private equity. And the first thing private equity do is load the debt on the balance sheet. And then if they drive the stocks up, they try and get their equity out. You got to say, well, who's making all the money on the debt? Because remember what I said earlier, you got to pay the debt holders first. So they're like sucking the lifeblood out. So these companies aren't making any money because they're paying it all to the debt structure that they've been placed in. I don't think Toys R Us are all getting killed by the online. I think they got a pretty good presence and they got a pretty good brand. They're getting killed because of the debt. But when sales start to slow relative to the growth, because you're getting pressure from the Amazons, et cetera, you can't manage that debt anymore.
That's right.
You just can't.
Yeah,
we're going right across the board and we can see it. So there's massive wealth and capital destruction going on right in front of it. We think the auto industry is ready for a cyclical rollover because 1/3 of all cars have been leased. We're going to see 3, 4 million leased cars coming back. It's going to kill the residual values of used cars, and that's why lease rates are so low. So, I mean, I'm just trying to say there are so many phenomenal opportunities to make money, but they're not watching the evening news with the Dow's up.
Gordon Long, you got to go to his site. The easiest way to get to Matsui, if you can't, just GordonTLong.com. I'll put all the links in at the end for all your YouTubers. Go up to the read-through, and I'll say, you know, for all the links there. And after in the USAWatchdog.com, just scroll down to the after interview section, and just before, I'll put all the links up for you. Gordon Long, thanks. You've got nothing to sell, no money to make. You're a private investor. You're an expert in finance and tech. And thanks for coming and putting your brain on display to enlighten some people and give them the real story. Gordon Long, thank you for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Greg, thank you very much for having me. Enjoyed it. Always enjoy it.
Okay, so that's the end of that video. Dave still has not joined us, but I will open up the phone lines if anybody would like to comment on what you just heard. The telephone number is 866-510-9025. Hit ** on your keypad. And that will put you into the conversation. One of the things that I heard early on in the video is that it's possibly that this system about to crash. And when I say this system, I'm talking about this capitalistic system here in the United States, as they were I was reading the description, and I think they touched upon it, that the stock market is a gamble. It really is a gamble. And how they're saying that, you know, nobody's really investing anymore. It's all debt. And that is obviously not sustainable, as they use the example of Puerto Rico. So like I've always said, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. It definitely didn't crumble in a day. And these sort of things do not worry me. I'm not scared. I'm not worried about the future. If it crash, it crash. If it come tumbling down, well, I say that'll give people an opportunity to build something better. All right, so let me see if Ross is on the line. Ross, if you don't mind, if you would like to go through some of the news stories that you and Dave posted and share those with the audience, you could do so if you're not busy right now. But Dave is meeting with some business partners, and that's why he's not here. He asked me to start the program for him and get this video playing. Let me see. Let me pull up something right quick. Guess I can go through some of these news stories. Let me see. You have a article that he posted. Again, these are all posted in btrcommunity.com. If anybody wants to get links to the articles, again, you can go to btrcommunity.com. Let's see. We have an article from 9 to 5 Max says smartphone use has radical impact on mental health of teens. Claims San Diego psych professor. A San Diego State University professor of psychology and author Gene Twenge has claimed that smartphone usage is having a radical impact on both the behavior and mental health of U.S. teenagers. The arrival of the smartphone has radically changed every aspect of teenagers' lives, from their social interactions to their mental health. And I say this, anything can be bad for you, okay? If parents are not monitoring the use of these smartphones, and what could they possibly be doing on smartphones that could be affecting their mental health other than accessing media, which they can access that media in other forms on a computer? I think that when the video games came out, like the Atari, I remember back in the 70s when the Atari first came out. I mean, if your child spends all day on video games, and depending upon what type of video games that they're playing, that can have an impact on them. So I'm not one to put it all on a smartphone. A smartphone is a tool just like anything else. And the smartphone accesses media. You can access the internet with the smartphone. You can play games on the smartphone. So I imagine that the smartphone, I don't know why they're focusing on the smartphone when you have all these tablets out here that do the same thing. Again, these video gaming systems, now you can play other people online, and children spend a tremendous amount of time online playing these shooter games, and that has a psychological impact. I mean, just like on BTR News, we've been working with Clear the Airways Project about this murder music that has murderous messaging in it, and that's being sent out through the airways through these terrestrial radio stations. That has an impact on you. So I just don't see how using a smartphone is so radical, having such a radical impact on the mental health of teens. I don't understand that. Okay, so Israel, another story. This is from Yahoo.com. Another story, Israel's going to war in Syria to fight Iran. Israeli officials believe that Iran is winning its bid for dominance in the Middle East, and they are mobilizing to counter the regional realignment that threatens to follow. The focus of Israeli military and diplomatic campaign is Syria. So basically what they're saying is that Israel, which has already reportedly been bombing convoys inside of Syria, engaged in entering their airspace illegally. And I really don't care. To be honest with you, I just don't. I don't care about that whole thing. let the chips fall where they may. U.S. North Korea war, real possibility as risk of military measures by Trump grows. They were actually speaking about that, and that all of these threats that Donald Trump is issuing, and just how unstable he is, that the market should reflect that, especially when you're talking about destroying entire nations and possibly plunging the world into global nuclear war one. That should have some impacts on the market, but it's not having any impact on the market. So definitely they covered that in that video there. But it is a real possibility. Trump is very unstable. He's a loose cannon, if you will, has no discipline whatsoever. In terms of diplomacy, he's a name caller, throws childish risk and what have you. Of course, I know they'll probably be sending other people to try to talk with these people, but I don't know. I don't know what to say. Either it's going to happen or it's not. I'm not one person. I'm not the type of person that gets worried about these things that are out of my control. Should we pay attention to them? Certainly. We should pay attention to them because, again, this could have a global world impact, and we should be preparing for everything as much as possible. But if you are, let's say you're in California, how do you prepare for a nuclear war in California, especially if you're black and poor? How do you prepare for that? You ain't got money for no bomb shelters to, you know, put underground. Your best bet would to be to leave California. If this was to look like it's going to escalate into war. All right, next story. Cracks in dollar are getting larger. DailyReckoning.com is reporting this story. Many Daily Reckoning readers are familiar with the original petrodollar deal that the United States made with Saudi Arabia. It was set up by Henry Kissinger and Saudi princes in 1974 to prop up the U.S. dollar. Again, and they kind of touched upon that also when they were talking about in that video fiat currency. All that simply means is it's nothing but paper. It's paper. It's debt is what it is. It's not backed by gold. And we've seen that anytime there is a move made by a country to wean itself off the U.S. dollar or to set up a competing currency, as Gaddafi had designs on doing through the African Union, but the African Union, they hung him out to dry. After everything that he did for Africa, they definitely didn't have his back, and they took the side of the oppressor. Africa should be shameful about that. The African Union, which Libya was a member of, and what was the African Union for? It was for mutual trade, mutual development of those member countries, and also mutual defense. But once NATO started arming them terrorists and bombing Libya, you ain't hear nothing from them other African nations. So there's something to be said about that. But yeah, the reason that they attacked Libya didn't have anything to do with terrorism, didn't have anything to do with Gaddafi killing his quote-unquote own people, the people that had the highest standard of living in Africa, had nothing to do with that. That was all lies from the Obama administration. The real reason was he had designs of setting up a gold-backed currency for the African Union. Let's see, we got a couple of callers on the line. I also just got a text from Dave. He'll be joining us shortly. Let's go to Mail first. Mail, thanks for calling in the Tando Radio Show. What's on your mind today?
What's up, big brother?
Doing the best I can behind these enemy lines. How about yourself?
Same thing, man. I got an echo on the phone for some reason, but I got two questions. What happened to the gold that they? Where did Gaddafi's gold go?
I can't answer that question. I think you would have to ask the CIA that, along with what happened to their weapons as well. I have no idea, Mel. What happened to the gold?
Okay, because it's like they went in there. Hey, and Scotty. Murdered that man.
Yeah, Dave. Yeah, you got a couple of callers on the board. We're getting a lot of background noise from one of the lines. If y'all could watch y'all background noise, please. But yeah, Dave, Mel had just asked a question about what happened to Libya's gold. So I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I heard. I heard him. What happened to Libya's goal? Right. So hey, let me just say this real quick. Thank you, Scotty. Sorry I couldn't get out of a business. Had to take care of that. Took care of it. So just back getting back here. I'm going to get into the board really quickly, and we'll jump into today's show. Just want to once again thank you so much, Scotty, for playing the video and you all being participants in this. So what's up, Big Mel? How you doing, brother?
What's up, big brother?
How you feeling?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Cool.
It sounds like the meeting went well. It seems like the meeting went well.
I don't know. We'll see. So I'm on the board. I see you. What's up, Big Roz? What's up, everyone else
that's there? Brother Rod. But I mean, like, what happened to the gold? Yeah. I mean, what did they do with it? And how is it that just because they killed this one man, did it destroy this whole agenda? I mean, I don't understand that, and that's weird to me. But my second, before you address that, before I mute my line, I talked to my other big little brother, and he said that basically we have to go to war with North Korea, because if we don't, then it's going to be civil unrest, because the white nationalists have to have conflict. So that's the only thing that'll keep us from going into conflict, is if we have a conflict with someone else. Do you agree with that? And I'm going to mute my line.
The system, in my opinion, the system wants to untie the United States. It wants to continue the legacy of Americanizing, and that means is that there's a method to everything, in my opinion. It doesn't really matter if it's going to be North Korea. It doesn't matter if it's going to be Russia and China. It doesn't matter if it's going to be here stateside. They're going to do that because that is more important to maintain control over the global population than this figment of a population that they use for their leverage. So it doesn't matter how it comes. It's going to come, because this is how you subjugate and keep people from fulfilling who they truly are and what their capabilities are. And so, yeah, it's going to happen either way. It's, you know, in my opinion, is quite apparent, because the rest of the world is already walking away from the U.S. And I see that in a lot of different arenas. That I just can't express here, but it is really, really, really happening. So, yeah, I definitely see that. But it doesn't matter if it's North Korea is a proxy front. So is everything else. All of the wars have been bankers' wars, and bankers' wars are facilitating the method of subjugation subjugation and enslavement. And it really doesn't matter how they do it. They just want to get it done. And they pull those lever strings so that people will stay confused as to what is really happening, so that they can't have an appropriate response to protect themselves from the magic tricks. So, great, great question.
It's just my opinion.
I apologize
again. Let me interject. I wanted to ask one more question.
Of course, brother.
I don't understand how Russia is beefing with Australia. How does that correlate? Because Russia is, Australia is way south. It's why are they beefing with Australia? Russia? What's the correlation? How do they fit in? How does Australia fit in the puzzle?
Australia is no different than the United States. Australia is no different than Venezuela. It's no different than China. There's no different. There is no difference. The governments are all in one big fraternity. You've never ever seen governments go to war. You've never seen governments go to war. You've seen governments declare wars that they don't have to fight. So they're not ever beefing with each other. They go to their meetings, and those meetings are what? Secret. Why are these things in the, why are these meetings secret? They're secret for a reason, so that you don't know. And then you know what we, you know what the general population says? Oh, that needs to be secret. See, one of the things about conspiracy theories is this: there really doesn't need to be any conspiracy theories, because we allow, we make excuses to uphold their overall lies. So Russia's not beefing with anybody. North Korea's not beefing with the United States. They're not beefing with each other. In the past wars, there was no war that Germany fought against Europe. What really happened is quite plain and simple. But see, what it is that the system tells you this is what you see. And believe your seeing eyes. So they present to you what they want you to see, when it's the opposite of the truth at all. These governments are in one big fraternity. If the U.S., think about it, let's say Germany. If Germany really went to war against other countries in Europe and against the U.S., then why didn't Germany die like the soldiers that fought on the different sides? Who was the only ones that were dying? People that didn't declare the wars, people that didn't, but they were told what side that they were supposed to take. Somebody has agitated. Remember when we were growing up, there were those agitators? They always wanted to agitate a fight, but they weren't the ones fighting. This is what you have, but on a much bigger scale and scope and scheme. See, because that type of mentality is taught in schools. Completely taught in schools. So Germany never went to war with anybody. Germany never went to war against another country. The U.S. has never gone to war against China, against Japan or North Korea or Vietnam or Iran or Iraq or anything else, or Grenada. No, what has happened was this. They put uniforms, and there was a psychological inducement of nationalism, which is nothing more than idolatry. They put that on the people, and the people actually fought the overall wars. People die. Everyday people that don't decide that a war is going to be fought are the ones that die. So think about it. If you, what has this system taught us? If you're making the decisions, do you ever go to the war with the other person that's making decisions? No, you send your soldiers. What is a soldier? One that takes orders. So, they're not beefing. That's
okay,
a diversion.
Okay, I'm sorry, man. Look, okay, so why would North Korea have an interest in beefing with Australia? Why would North Korea have an interest in beefing with Australia? I don't understand that. It's like they're... I don't
North Korea or Russia?
No, North Korea. Why would North Korea beef with Australia? What is... I mean, I can't tie the two together. I just...
Because Australia is a close military partner with the United States. So possibly... So if the United States is going to attack North Korea, I would highly doubt that they go it alone. They possibly could, but I remember when I was stationed in Hawaii, we had joint military exercises with Australian soldiers. That's possibly the reason. I don't know, Mel.
Mm-hmm. But and then one thing, if you're going to look at it from a sovereign standpoint, what did Australia say? What happened recently in Australia? Australia made ties with China. Made major ties with China. Made ties with China so much that the U.S., from the overall governmental standpoint, was very upset. Remember when there was two phone calls that celebrity figurehead Trump made in the beginning. He called Mexico and cussed him out, and who was the other one? It was Australia. Why was it Australia? Because when they went to the overall AIIB conference, Australia made a deal, because China told them, you're either going to make a deal with us or with the U.S. Whom do you choose? And guess what Australia chose? China. Then they closed down one of the largest spy bases on the world. The U.S. kicked out all of the Australian civilian personnel that works there. Kicked them out. It's in Australia, but the overall base itself is known as U.S. territory. They kicked them all out. It's a lot of different things that's going on, but in my overall, it's all hocus pocus. It's all hocus pocus. Because who builds the military? Who really builds the military? The overall people that fight and die at the wage of the military, the everyday person. They do it by having us work, creating energy from that work that they monetize based in their overall currency that they've created. So if you create something, what does that mean? That means you have the patent on it. You have the patent on it. So if you have the patent on it, why do you create something? So that it can do what? Benefits you or your overall agenda. So, listen, got to get ready to go to a commercial break. And then when we come back, I'm going to answer Mel's question about where did Libya's gold go, in my opinion. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, I see my man Jerry that's in queue. We're going to go to you after Big Mel. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit star. We'll see you in queue, and we'll definitely bring you up. So my man Mel had some great questions about why would this country be beefing with this country and that country be beefing with another, because it's, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, this is all a charade. And it's done to continuously have more, because when you're enslaving someone, you have subjugation. You have to have continuous destabilization, because if you don't have continuous destabilization, then people start to think for themselves. There is no opportunity for you to, because in a state of war, what do you need? You need the government to protect you. So if there's no need for anyone to protect you, then there's no need for a standing army. If there's no need for a standing army, how are you going to be able to conquer the people of the world, move them off their land, move them off the resources, and come in and seize it for your overall benefit? So it's a dirty, dirty game. It's a dirty, dirty game. And what we see is what the system wants us to see, because if we ever pull back the overall veil or the curtain, we'll see that the emperor has no clothes. We'll see that this individual has been manipulating this whole system so deeply, and they have to start at the earliest age possible to indoctrinate us to think a certain way. Whenever you talk about the United States, you always hear people say, we about to go to war? We this, we that. So whenever you say we, that means that you are surrendering your overall morality to someone else's agenda. What are you talking about, we? So you got to take on everything that they've done, and you've condoned what they're doing. Doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, because when you start to ask real, whenever you start to think from a sovereign standpoint, you see the system for really what it is. It's deeply rooted in deception, propaganda, and manipulation. But it takes a sovereign mind to see that there is no such thing as freedom. But there is something known as sovereignty. And you have that already. And some of us, our sovereignty is so strong that with our sovereignty, we choose to surrender it for someone else to gain from it, to monetize it, to manipulate it, to do and use as they please. Ways and means. Your way of life provides for someone else's means of life. You're still sovereign. Even in a cage, you're sovereign. So, and at some point and at some time, in order for things to change, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed, because we keep doing the same old things. We keep doing the same things. Play by their rules, they rule. They rule. So Gaddafi's goal. Well, what happened with Gaddafi's goal? You got to go back. Back to the Hunt brothers, when Gaddafi was a colonel, and after taking over Libya through a coup, one of the first things that he did is he nationalized the oil fields that were there. And there was a family known as the Hunt family, and the Hunt families were oil people. Today that family still owns the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Hunt family was upset that they got kicked out of Libya. They were no longer able to take oil from Libya for their overall profits. So what did they do? They did something different. They decided to try to make a deal with Libya. And there were other people that were involved. Gaddafi was one. There was a crown prince of Saudi Arabia that was another, and it was the president of the Philippines at the time that was a lawyer that was able to read documentation and knew what the contracts that go about what they really meant. And he was in on it as well. And this is where the U.S. and the bankers started to despise Gaddafi from the beginning. And again, this is why Reagan bombed him and everything else. They kept trying to get him to go along with the agenda, which the only mistake, in my opinion, from a sovereign standpoint, the only mistake that Gaddafi made was that he didn't wait to the appropriate moment. And he was trying to do what was necessary and appropriate, in my opinion, from that sovereign standpoint. From a governing sovereign standpoint, but I still think it doesn't matter. They're all in cahoots with each other. So what he did was he wanted to make sure that there was a new economy that was going to be brought about on the continent. And being the president of the African Union, he required all business deals, all dealings of African goods had to be paid in an asset. He wanted to take Africa off of a debt system and put them on a collateral system where they only exchange assets for other assets. You can't exchange something that's priceless for something that's worthless. And that was the straw, that was the final straw. They tried to corner the silver market back in the 80s with the Hunt brothers, and they almost completed it. And when they weren't able to complete it, this is where Paul Volcker, you hear the Volcker rule, was the Fed chairman at the time. They totally economically decimated the Hunt family, took them out of, and that also deleveraged the Libya. And what they did was they told Saudi Arabia, don't do that anymore. And Saudi Arabia obliged. They gave them another deal. How about this? And it all had to do with the cornering of silver, of the silver market. Gaddafi was way ahead of his time. Way ahead of his time. There are some people that hate it and everything. I get it, but you got to look at some of the deeds that this man did. And so, once he was taken out, there was a country that had wanted to repatriate their gold. And that country was Venezuela, that Hugo Chavez said he was the first one to go back to the gold window and said, I want my gold back. Send Venezuela its gold back. See, the key is the first one to demand something is the one that is the one that gets what they demanded. So he was the first country to demand their gold back in this era right now. So what did they have to do? They had to find the gold somewhere. Why? Because all of the gold that the U.S. has is hypothecated. Basically, they're not giving it up. They say they don't have it. They said they gave it to here so that they create a maze so that no one knows where the gold is. But believe me, it's right where they want it to be. So Venezuela wanted their gold back, and they had to deliver. Why did they have to deliver that gold? They had to deliver that gold because he was the first one, and they didn't want to run on a gold bank. So what did they do? Said, okay, here's the plan. We're going to give Venezuela their gold back, but we're going to collapse their economy, and we're going to kill Chavez. And when we collapse their economy, what's the first thing that Venezuela is going to do? They're going to sell their gold back on the open market. And who's going to be the ones that's going to be buying it? The ones that took it, that gave it to them in the first place. So here's what they did. They had to come up with the appropriate tonnage of gold. So what did they do? What did the French do? All of a sudden, the French declare war. Well, they didn't declare war. They started to attack and destabilize Libya. And what they did is they went into Libya and took the Lebanese in gold, the gold that was there in Libya, and they sent it to Venezuela temporarily because they knew they were going to be able to make Venezuela sell it. And that's exactly what they did. That's, in my opinion, that's the chain of custody that the gold went from Libya to Venezuela back to those that originally gave the gold to that took the gold from Libya. Same thing shortly after that, not too long after that, Germany requested their gold back. So what did they do? They destabilized the Ukraine. And in destabilizing the Ukraine, the first thing that they did was took the Ukrainian gold and sent it to Germany, all 33 tons. 33 metric tons. So that's the chain of custody that I saw with the gold. And look what happened to Venezuela after that. They crashed and collapsed that country. Same thing with Puerto Rico. It was, I don't know, Jerry probably remembers this. I don't know if he does. But Jerry probably remembers it. Remember this. It was a couple of years ago before I was on Black Talk Radio Network, before we had Tando Radio Show. It was on Blackonomics. And the co-host on Blackonomics had just returned back from Puerto Rico. And he was talking about the opportunities in Puerto Rico, this and that. And I said to that individual, I said, there's no way in the world Puerto Rico is done. Puerto Rico is completely done. Puerto Rico is done because it's a jewel. The globalists have marked Puerto Rico. And he said, nah, that'll never happen, this. I said, Puerto Rico is in the crosshairs. Watch in a few years, Puerto Rico will never be the same, and it won't be the country that you know. And it wasn't because I was psychic or I'm a prophet. Wasn't that at all. It's just that when you follow these people and their treacherous overall events of the past and look at it for what it's really worth, it's quite plain what they do. They use the same game plan at the appropriate time. Look at Puerto Rico now. The intention is to move all of those people off of that land, come in and acquire it for nothing at all. It's a wealth transfer. And they're willing to sacrifice through ritual practice of sacrifice to get that overall land. It's a sacrifice for assets to control the masses of people. They'll kill off a few. They'll kill off a billion, 2 billion, whatever it needs to maintain their overall control of assets. Because if you have assets, what need do you have for a boss? What alarm clock will you ever listen to when you can sustain yourself? The birds, the bees, and the animals don't have an alarm clock that they have to listen to unless they've been captured and conquered. And this system tells you they conquer. What is conquering? Conquering is nothing more than a politically correct way to say that you robbed someone. That's it. It's absolutely it. And so the beat goes on. So, Mel, just to try to put some, you know, answer, I know that was really, really long, but that was the train of custody that I saw with Gaddafi and the overall goal that Libya had. And because why is Libya so important? One of the things for those that have been in the military, and particularly in the Marine Corps, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, there's a reason why that's said, because Libya is a critical choking point for war, and it has light sweet crude. So whoever controls Libya will have a strategical placement for resupplying. Guess what else? So does Venezuela. So that was just my take, Mel, and I'm sticking to it. So,
but how was Venezuela so easily just crippled? I mean, and what about the racism aspect of it? I mean, like the dominant. I'm with you, Dave, bro, and I really appreciate you, man. You and
No. Yeah.
Y'all some brilliant brothers, man. Y'all really are brilliant, man. I really appreciate y'all brothers, man. But I'm just like, dang. The racist aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at it from a racist standpoint, racism is a tool of war. It's a tool of war, just like artillery, just like weather manipulation. And real quick, let me tell you how bad this weather manipulation has been going on. This weather manipulation is going on for centuries. The Dust Bowl, that was controlling the weather. They had dirt, topsoil, that was so thick that people couldn't even see their hands. The wind was moving from one part of the country to the other and destroying all the crops and everything else. This is all weather manipulation.
Can I join in?
Yeah. One second, Jeremy, get right to you. So racism is just a tool, a part of a tool that's used for the overall objective to keep people enslaved and subjugated. Because if you keep them divided, what does that mean? Then they won't cooperate. It's no collective prudence. So great points there, Mel. Let me get to Jerry, then I'm going to go to my man, Roz. So go ahead, Jerry. What's up, brother?
How are y'all gentlemen doing tonight, Brother Scotty, Brother Dave, Mel, Roz, all the other callers?
My man.
My man. First thing I want to say was, to his point, he was asking why Russia and Korea would attack Australia. If we're going off of what we were taught, and I've heard a few things about the flat world concept, I'm not really on agreement with that. I haven't found enough information for myself to agree with that.
Flat Earth, but, yeah, the flat Earth.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not really like I said. I don't have enough information to agree with that. So I still go with the spear. And when we're talking about the spear, it's two things that we have to come in contact with. For one, it's still up under the British colonies. The Britain is an ally of the United States. Although they are doing underhanded ties with China, they are still an ally to the United States. Not to mention, when we're talking about this spear concept of the earth, it's still it's a strategic place on the world stage. It's right there. It's close to South America, which is attached to North America.
These are a lot of resources.
Exactly, and it's untapped because they have left most of that undrilled and unrefined because they were the only ones who was colonizing that. So that's one reason why these places would have beef per se with Australia. Another thing is, from the racist standpoint that Mel was speaking about, just here recently, the colonizers of Australia have given a lot of land to the Aboriginal brown people of Australia. Now, if you could go to war with them and clear them out, that means that everything is up for grabs for you. That's just one point as far as the question that Mel asked. Another thing, you made a lot of points when you was talking about these people repatriating their gold. And I do remember you talking about Puerto Rico. And that's one of the first times that I found out, before you mentioned it here on BTR, that Puerto Rico holds all of our wealth transfers as far as the pensions that's still alive, the 401ks, and all of the other stocks and stuff. You know, they get to hold it over in Puerto Rico so they don't have to pay United States taxes on it. So when that went up, me personally, my 401k, because I raised this question about 2.5 years ago, is that Puerto Rico is going into the dumps. They're on their way to bankruptcy. What's going to happen with our 401k? Because I was trying to get out of my 401k and they would not allow me. By no means, they would not allow me to get out of it. They wouldn't even let me downgrade what I was putting into it before I found out the information. So when I brought it up to them, just so happened 2.5 years later, they took our 401k out of a company that was based in Puerto Rico. Well, excuse me, not based in Puerto Rico, but they was having dealings with Puerto Rico. And in the small print, nobody noticed it but me. I brought it to a few people's attention, and they was like, what that mean? And that just let me know that they wasn't aware of what was going on. It's called Transamerica, who does I-401K here in Chattanooga. And they just changed that, and it states in very small print that we do not deal in New York City, Puerto Rico, and in the Virgin Islands. So these are all the small things that happen to let people who are within the know, which whether you know it or not, if you're listening to this program, you are within the know. You know what to look for. Most people do not. So when you see things like that, you have to be aware of what's the turnarounds that's going on. So those are a few small answers to Mel's question. We can't forget that Russia was trying to repatriate their gold. They wasn't in no war with the United States, but when they asked for their gold back, then all of a sudden they was terrorists. So these are all small things that we have to pay attention to when these things are going on. I actually had one question, man. with everything that's going on in the world right now, we have all of this aid that's going to Houston, to Puerto Rico. I haven't heard anything, not one thing mentioned about Louisiana, because the hurricane did it didn't smash it like Katrina, but it did not touch down, but it did cause a lot of destruction in New Orleans. And I still haven't heard anything about Flint, Michigan, and the water crisis that wasn't quote unquote a natural disaster. This was a man-made disaster by the U.S. government. Haven't heard anything about it. And when I ask people about it, they don't have nothing to say, so they only come back as what did you do? Well, see, what I do is not the point. The point is that and I don't have, you know, right, I don't Jerry. Have to tell them. I don't have to tell right. them what I done or what I sent. The fact of the matter is that this was created by the U.S. government. And I personally believe, I don't know for sure, because like I said, I was in tune with the harp manufacturer. Excuse me, I'm sorry. The harp, I can't even think of the name of it, but what it does is that it tracks when harp is turned on and how long it's turned on. I was mm-hmm. in tune with that, but they took down the website for that. They took mm-hmm. it down just here recently, actually. So that caused concern for me, but I stay in tune with that. And when I seen that didn't come up, and then I started seeing all of the hurricanes and stuff popping up, it was amazing, because to me, that qualifies as an adjustment. That was adjusting for the people who may be looking for these things and be able to point these things out so they could tell somebody else. So they adjusted to that. But yep. those were the few comments. I have plenty more, but I know that you have other callers. So I'm going to sit back and I'm going to mute myself, and I just press star when I hear something more interesting that I might want to get into later on. Thank you for having my call, Dave.
My man, Jerry. Well said on that. So let me see how much we got. 3 minutes before we go to the break. We got a couple of callers in queue. We got my man Roz. Then we have, I don't know who came in because I was looking at something else. If it was Thomas or brother Davis. So I'm not quite sure who came in first. So I'm just going to go. We'll go to Roz, Brother Davis, and then we'll go to my man Thomas, because I think that's the way it came in from the way the board is laid out. I can't really tell. So, but we'll definitely get to that. Well said, as always. You know, what Jerry was basically saying is that we have to really decide and be really aware of what's going on, because there's a whole lot. Yes, there will be some misinformation. You may not get everything right, but you're able to discern things that's so important. And let me tell you, discernment was given to you by the great Creator. It wasn't something that man is giving you. Man is giving you a book, and they're always going to tell you, what does the manual say? Because if you follow what the manual say, that means that you're going to turn off with your instincts that the great creator has given you. One of the things about when you start to become exercise more of your sovereignty in everything else is that you actively elevate and you actively evolve your behavior. And it's all done by because you realize the importance of different things. And so we have to evolve our behavior completely. And it's very, very important that we do that. So I don't want to get too much in it. I didn't want to cut these brothers off by what they're about to say. So what we're going to do, we're going to go to the commercial break. We'll come back. We'll go to Roz. We'll go to Brother Davis. And then we'll go to my man Thomas out of NYC. You're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, Tando Radio Show, and we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to the Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit star, C-U-N-Q, and definitely will bring you up. So we're going to get back to our callers. I don't like to keep them waiting. We're going to my man, Roz, then we'll go to Brother Davis, and then we'll go to my man, Thomas. Go ahead, Roz.
Peace to you, Brother Dave, Jerry Mel. Scotty, everybody, Brother and Sister Davis as well. Man, this is a great show. I just thought it was interesting to hear the video because they reiterated just about everything you've been saying for quite a long time, and gave a little more insight into what they see too, which is just very interesting. But it like you said, it shouldn't cause room for alarm unless you haven't taken time to prepare for what they have in store for us. Now, it's interesting, the whole flat earth thing, I don't know, it's always kind of puzzled me, because the whole flat earth theory came from, well, the popular version of it came from Greeks. They were the ones who used to think that planets were plates. So the original name for planets were actually plates, because they thought that every spherical object that they saw in the sky was a flat plate. And they're the ones who kind of carried that until, like, after the Bronze Age, when they were dealing with people from Africa, who facilitated their understanding that the world was not necessarily round, but it was spherical. I remember there's a map called the Turin Papyrus map, and this is one of the oldest maps in the world. It was found in Kemet. And when they first found the map, they laid it out flat, like, you know, we would normally lay out maps on the table to look at it today, and none of the continents made sense to them at all. They were like, well, what is this? Why is everything all over the place? They were able to find the continents. They found America, North America, South America. All the continents were there, including Antarctica, but they were not in their proper location. And it was only, and it was funny, this is documented in Dr. Van Sertima's work, they came before Columbus. It was only when they took the map and wrapped it around a globe that all of the different continents fell right into place. And they were just marveled at the genius of these people, because that map was actually a copy of an even older map that they did not have access to. So
right.
Even back then, this was dating back to like almost 1500 BC. So even back then, when the Kamar made that map, they put it in a spherical form. Now, the Earth changes shape. That's another thing people don't take into account. Due to plate tectonics,
right,
volcanic eruptions, all of these things create changes in the way that the weight is distributed on the planet and the way that the planet is shaped. So it's constantly changing. It's evolving all the time, just like we are. We're just not taught these things. So I don't understand the whole flat Earth thing. It just doesn't make any sense to me in that regard. And there's just a couple other scientific questions that if you ask, it just this doesn't fall in line with me. But if I come across something where it makes sense and it's logical, then maybe I could shift my understanding. But I think my ancestors knew best, and they knew before everybody else. So I'll stick with what their rendition is of reality, because it ties in with what I think reality is, not just because they said it, but because they were scientifically accurate with what they did. There wasn't no propaganda behind it. It was about reality. So I'll run with what my ancestors said until somebody else shows me that they were wrong in some form or fashion in regards to that. Now, when you were talking about the fact that these so-called politicians aren't the ones who fight these wars, it's the, you know, the people. They send people to fight their agenda. And if you fight for their agenda, and if you think about it, it's no different than chess. You know, you have a person who plays chess against another person, but those two people don't start beating each other up from across the table. They have the pieces that represent them, and they are trying to outdo each other on the chessboard.
Right.
So the planet is the chessboard, and when you talk about the different levels of the military, the generals, colonels, sergeants, lieutenants, all of them down to the grunts, those are the chess pieces. Those
right.
are the chess
right.
pieces. The difference is they're living chess pieces, and what they do is they, like you said, they condition you and psychosocially condition you and indoctrinate you into standing behind their agenda. That's why I've always said, if we were really, really thinking, if there was a beef between Russia and Australia and China and the U.S., take Donald Trump, Jinping, Putin, and whoever runs Australia, put them in some island, give them weapons, and let them kill each other. But we don't think this
right.
way.
And that country wins.
Exactly, and that's how you determine who wins. Let Trump try to kill Putin, and if Putin kills Trump, then, hey, they won. And you leave it at that. But we're not even thinking in that way because we're used to being controlled, and we're used to having a head who everyone follows. And as long as we continue, yeah, a leader, and as long as we continue along those lines, we're going to continue to see everything that we're seeing now. And it's funny because I've been watching this Vietnam War documentary, and I'm up to chapter 9 now. It's 10 of them. And when you hear black people describe killing Vietnamese versus the white people describing killing Vietnamese, it's two different things. The black people have a conscience. They talk about the fact that they were forever changed. One guy described the first person he killed in Vietnam. It was he bare hands in the dark in the cave. The brother said, you know, the guy who I killed wasn't the only casualty. It was the civilized version of myself that was also a casualty. Where the white people were like, this is a drug. This is great. You know, I love killing them. Like, the whole mentality is completely different between the two groups. And they also talked about the fact that there was so much racial beef in Vietnam, how you had black soldiers throwing grenades into white leaders' bunks and blowing them up, throwing fragging grenades, and sometimes they'll do a warning and throw a smoke grenade in your area, and if you don't listen, they'll frag you real quick. Like, they were gunning down racists. So imagine you fighting for your country, and you still have some white guy who is your superior, who is racially abusing and terrorizing you along with some of the other little white soldiers that are alongside you, and you end up having to turn your N-16 on the people you came there with, supposedly to fight with. This is what was happening. So when you get to chapter 9, it's going to be mind-blowing. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on was today I told you I had problems with my phone. So I didn't get it fixed, but I got a wireless charger. When I went to Sprint, I sat with a young female who's Puerto Rican. So I just happened to have a conversation. I said, hey, how's your family doing? You know, is everybody okay? So she said, well, half my family already relocated to the United States, so everyone here is okay. But we had trouble for about a week because we couldn't contact anybody.
Yeah.
So she said that a couple of her cousins were actually stuck. Like, they went there to bury their grandfather who passed away, and they were trapped due to the hurricane. She said that they were literally in the jungle, living off the land, not knowing what they were doing, how they were surviving. They weren't, you know, people who were into nature, so they didn't know what was edible from what wasn't. But for about 2 days, they were surviving in the jungle with no cover, no nothing. And she said that another friend of the family drove a Jeep and was able to find them and take them through all these different parts of the jungle. They had to go through people's personal property, so they would have to knock on the gate for them to open the gate, for them to drive through these back roads to get them to a place of safety where they could facilitate evacuating to come to the United States. And they literally said, if it wasn't for this guy, we would have died. We didn't know where we were. We didn't know what we were doing. We lucked up for those 2 days, and he was like, you know, he was just like the savior at that point. She said she had other relatives who did not want to leave. They were like, we're not leaving. This is ours. I'm not going nowhere. And she said she had an aunt who saved up all kinds of food and meat and all kinds of stuff. She said that she had tons of ice coolers, and all of them were filled with meat. This is in a housing complex, so this is not just her, but the people in her housing complex. And somehow she says she has some place that she hasn't divulged where she goes to get fresh ice every day. And she said that every day they have basically a party where everybody in the building complex comes together. They call people from the surrounding area. If you don't have power, you don't have electricity, you need something to eat, come here. She said that's how they do it there. She said in some parts of Puerto Rico, they only allow 2 hours of water per day. So the 2 hours of water is for you to use it to take a shower, bathe, whatever, and then also for you to put water in containers to carry you through to the next day when the two-hour rations, they've been rationing out the water, because she said in that woman's housing complex, they have their own reservoir dedicated to that housing complex. So they're rationing the water, they have food, and they're not planning to leave to go nowhere. So that was one good story that I heard from Puerto Rico, but the vast majority, I say 98% of everything else I'm hearing is horrible. So, yeah, this is just, and this was firsthand, just sitting across the table from her. I just looked at her. I knew she was, something told me she was a Spanish-speaking Caribbean person. I don't like to use Latino or Hispanic or all of that nonsense. So, and I just asked her. She said she was Puerto Rican, and that was how the conversation went. So I found that to be quite fascinating. It made me think of you and how you talk about being prepared. And she said literally her aunt was, like, happy. She was chill. She's like, we're good. We just need to get everything taken care of as far as fixing the country, but we're not leaving. I'm not going to the United States. I'm not going to any other island. This is home. This is where I'm at. This is where I'm going to be. So, hey, let's see how this plays out. But I really feel for those people, because this system is a savage brute, and it put that on great display right after the hurricane. Puerto Rico became the resurrected Katrina, but in the Caribbean. So I'm going to mute my line, and thanks again for giving me the opportunity to speak.
And far, far worse. But great, great, as always, Roz. And, you know, one thing is that Puerto Rico was really set up for this. This was built. And one of the things about this system is that they have a plan, a 100-year plan, when we have a 10-minute plan, 2-week plan at the most. And actually the overall setup that we're going to see play out soon has already been scripted. It's already been scripted, and it's going to play itself out. So Puerto Rico was purposely put in an economic position so that when they do bring the overall hurricane, that people that are unprepared will be begging to leave. They created a disaster, and they created a humanitarian crisis. Why? So people will move off that land. You're going to move them off that land. It was all purposely done. There are no coincidences. None whatsoever in today's world. The civilization doesn't work off a coincidence. It works off of agenda. The ecosystem works off of balance. Well, civilization is unbalanced. Works off of competition. So, just wanted to share that with you. Let me get to Brother Davis, because I definitely want you all to be able to express yourself. But real quick, before we do that, today's shows, in desperation, the system wants us to turn on each other via red rum. Red rum being murder. And I'm going to have that part of the show, and it's going to really focus on Puerto Rico, part of it. We'll have that on Monday. So I just wanted to let you all know that. So let's go to Brother Davis. Brother Davis, welcome to the show. And it's always good to hear the voice of a friend. Go ahead, Brother Davis.
Hey, it's Sister Davis.
Hey, Sister Davis.
She's listening also. But a couple of things. Oh, my goodness. This show is, like, all over the place, which is great. It's wonderful. All the different avenues, all the different interjections. But real quick, one thing I want to mention is that I want to talk about something else. One thing I want to mention is that I heard on the news two things. One thing that North Korea is getting ready to hit South Korea with the EMP, which I thought was interesting. They're threatening that. I can try to get that information and put it into I'll put it on the Facebook, and then we can flip it over to ATR, that information, because I think that's key, because now they're talking EMP for South Korea. Also, I want to mention that I heard and I saw on the news that a lady in Houston died of the flesh-eating disease. it got into a wound, a bug bite, actually. It got into a bug bite, which, of course, we all get when you go down south, all those mosquitoes biting you. And it, I guess she scratched it, and then she got into some of the water, and she died. They had her at the hospital. They were trying to save her, and she died from that flesh-eating amoeba that they say is in the south, in the warm waters, in like, you know, South Carolina, Georgia, all across Texas, any kind of standing water. You can't see the amoeba. You can't kill it, from what they're saying, like, because it's in swimming pools. And so evidently chlorine doesn't kill it. So now there's, this is a part of it, of all this disaster that's going on. And so she has died of the flesh-eating disease. So now they're going to start watching it. And the article mentioned that the doctor, that this doctor quoted by saying, oh, I was afraid this was going to happen. And it's like, duh, you knew that this was going to happen? So they were, like, waiting for the shoe to drop? So that's another whole ball game people have to deal with in Texas and in and anywhere it floods, Florida, wherever it floods, where it's very warm weather. But another thing I want to talk about is we were doing a delivery, and we were completely not able to use our cell phone, so we did not hear the video. We didn't hear the video, but I heard, we kind of jumped in when Brother Jerry was talking, and we heard flat earth stuff. Now, I'm going to tell y'all something, guys, on this line here on Tanto. I know this is divine because I've been studying this for about, I've been studying it, and then I shared it with my husband. I stumbled on it, and about 10 days or so. And I wanted to get personally more information before I go sharing it. But of course, the first person I said I'm going to share it with is Tanto folks, because they're open minded, you know, because you got to be very open minded for this. And I didn't say anything, but every opportunity I have, I've been going to this one website and listen to these videos that is off the chain. I mean, gives you absolute positive proof of flat earth. Now, before everybody gets on uproar and all this and that, when I was a child, I don't know, I'm a rare breed, guys. I'm just going to let y'all know. I'm a very rare breed here. And as a child, I came to the understanding that the earth was flat. And I always believed that as a child. I didn't disbelieve it until I started going to school and they started telling me something different. I always believed that we were inside. And everything else was a dome outside. Sort of like, the way I saw it as a child is like we were in a snow globe. You know, you were in a snow globe. You know how you see the little city or your house or whatever inside of a snow globe, and it snows in there, you know, when you shake it. That's what I always saw. And that's what I always believed as a child. I didn't disbelieve it until I went to school, and they, you know, I didn't say anything to anybody, but they were like, here's this globe, blah, blah, blah. Another thing I never believed that they walked on the moon. Never believed it. I, from a child looking at it, it looked like a TV show. It looked like a movie from sci-fi, whatever, whatever. But I never believed it. I don't care what nobody told me that it was true, that they had moon boots and jumped over craters. I never believed it. It looked like a show to me. I just never believed it. And now I have, and it has to be divine, because I said nothing to nobody about flat earth. I even just went over and said, Mr. Davis, did you say anything about flat earth, like when I was like asleep or something? You know what I mean? Because sometimes when the show's on, I'm sleeping because I have to drive. And he was like, honey, I didn't say nothing. Well, I'm telling you guys, these videos that I've been listening to has, you know, and I listen with an open mind because I just don't believe, you know, it resonated in my spirit because in my mind as a child, I always thought we lived in this snow globe. So, not a snow globe, but inside, not outside, not on the outside. And this debunks the, they talk about the gravity and how we were meant to believe that. They talk about the planets and how, you know, they go and say that they are in space. Well, you're only looking at a televised edition of what they're seeing. Well, what if it's all the Truman Show? What if it's all the Matrix? You know, what if it is? What if everything they're showing you, from TV to books to encyclopedias, has always been from the powers that be that want us to believe that? This person is also debunking all of the matriarchs and the patriarchs and how it all came to be, that we think the New World Order is starting right now. The New World Order started way back when it was all about Mother Earth, and then the patriarch started. But the thing that has just blown me out of water today is when I listened to this show today and y'all started talking about Flat Earth. Now, we have not talked about Flat Earth ever, really. Maybe one little blurb here and there, but it has to be divine. I think as a group, all of us, our subconsciouses are all starting to just, that veil is all just starting to come down. All of our pineal glands are just all starting to connect and starting to vibrate, and, you know, whether or not it's the cosmos knows that it's time. But when I listened, and then I had my husband listen to this Flat Earth, man, oh man, we are in for a ride. Because even the Bible talks about the firmament. They know. They all know. That's what they talked about. But then they leave. They give you an open door. They let the door swing, but it never opens. So you never really get a chance to walk through. They throw this stuff in front of us. It's all in front of us, and we just don't know. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And I didn't say anything because initially you think that a person's crazy. You just think that how can the earth be flat? But, you know, but you have to think about it. If you saw a picture of a rabbit that looked like a camel, and they said, this is a rabbit, and you kept seeing a picture of a camel, and they kept saying, it's a rabbit. And then you know, you'll start calling a camel a rabbit. Because that's all you know. Like, for example, there's the one show, the one movie, what's it called? It's a cartoon where they're mammals. I can't think of what it's called. They're mammals, and Queen Latifah plays this one mammal who, it's a mammal, but this mammal was raised by, like, squirrels or something. So in this whole movie in the beginning, she thinks she's a squirrel because that's who raised her, I think. She was raised by squirrels. She hangs from a tree. She thinks that she's a squirrel, and she's a mammal. And it took another mammal to say, no, you are not. And it just took, like, this whole time for them to understand that, no, you are not a squirrel. But you have to believe that if you're raised that's all you know, that's all you're going to believe until somebody comes with proof that what you think is real, it's not. I'm sorry, somebody wanted to ask a question?
Yeah, I just, because I know we, Dave is running real low. This is Jerry, Miss Davis. How are you doing, first and foremost?
I'm good.
I know Dave is running low and he want to get to the next caller. We have an opportunity to continue this conversation at a different number, but it's still on Black Talk Radio Network, and we can keep on talking about this for a couple more hours.
Yeah.
My man, that's fine. Right. That's fine. Like I said, I really wasn't going to say anything until it resonated today because,
man,
it has
Sister Davis,
because there was no reason
Davis,
that
don't
it
you
should have came up today.
Yeah, there's no reason to apologize. We can keep on talking about this. Not a whole lot later time than now. I just have to go set it up, and we can continue this conversation.
Right.
Well, it's foundational radio, but it's still part of Black Talk Radio.
So it'll be on Black Talk Radio later this evening.
Yeah, about 30 minutes. Let me get everything together, and it,
mm-hmm.
we
can yeah, you
can
just
so
transfer all
of
it.
Yeah. I just dial the same number later on.
Mm-hmm.
No, ma'am. It would not be the same number, but
hey, Jerry, like said, let me explain it to her. BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Just go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. It's a bunch of other radio stations on the platform, and Foundational Radio is one of those. And you can find his broadcast page, it should be right there in the menu with the other stations and programs. So you can still listen to it, but just go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com.
Okay.
Please let us know what the video is, sis.
I have your phone number, Davis team. I have your phone number, and I could just send it to you, and we can continue this.
Okay.
And I just wanted to ask, throw the name of the video out there so I could check it out myself, please, sister, and I appreciate you. Peace and love. This is Ross.
Okay, what I'll do, there's a bunch of videos, but we're kind of far into it now, but you have to kind of start at the beginning about the flat earth, and I will send it to you. And then it was really funny because there's a flat earth society up in Zion, Illinois, and Monday, for some reason, we were right there. Our load just ended up being too late. But we couldn't go to the actually society, like Hall of Fame type of building. But there's a whole society in Zion, Illinois, that embraces the and also Shaq embraces it. There's a lot of celebrities that are embracing it. And but yeah, I have to get the first one. I don't want to throw you in the middle because you'll be a little. I don't know. A lot of us are pretty. Well-rounded.
So, yeah, everybody here, yeah, Sister Davis. And don't ever hold out, Sister Davis. You bring,
well,
you and
like
Brother Davis bring so much
things.
I feel
things for myself a little bit.
Sure. I do the same thing. Yeah,
you know, I don't want y'all going down a rabbit hole and it's the wrong rabbit hole. Now, there's rabbit holes out there, but I'd rather have you be in the right one. But it was
right. Well, we know that you're sincere.
I know this must be the time and space for this because I have been doing this research for about 10. Last night I drove all night and I listened to
Sister Davis. Sister Davis.
Yes.
If Brother Davis is listening right now, the phone number to Foundation of Radio Uber Conference is, you ready?
Yes.
And this is for everybody else who want to continue on with this conversation because I am very excited to hear everything else you have to say, Sister Davis. That number is 423-398-1885. 423-398-1885.
Okay, and you said about 30 minutes. So we're talking like 8:37. Okay, all right. I'll connect then, and I'll look up the videos. And I'll find the first one so that, and I'll share that information then so everybody on the call that wants to partake in that can kind of start. I think it's important that you kind of start at the beginning just so that it makes sense. And this brother is like on point with a lot. He's been downloaded and researching for years. So, like I said, I just couldn't believe when I heard when Brother Hayes at Flat Earth, I was like, what? Because we listened to videos all evening, all last night, and up into this afternoon. So
I understand. I just brought that
Hold on, guys. So let's continue with there because I got one more call. I'm gonna try to give them some time because Jerry, you're gonna have it on Foundational Radio Network, so you'll be able to do it there. So let me just get this other person. Let me get my man Thomas in before we get out of here. I'm gonna let him because I don't think there's another show behind us. Give him a little time to go over a little bit. So Sister Davis, don't ever, man, don't ever hold out on us. You know, we talk about and we deal with everything, and that's the beauty of it all. So appreciate you and Brother Davis. Looking forward to spending more time with y'all as well. So let's go to my man Thomas in New York real quick. Go ahead, Thomas. We got like 4 minutes. Go ahead, Thomas.
I'm going to do it real fast. First, Brother Jerry, yes, when you set that up, please give me a call because I will dispel the hell out of the flat earth theory. As you know, I've been studying it probably just as long as Sister Davis, and I have some very valid questions that will dispel it. I wanted to say, because somebody mentioned Flint, Michigan earlier, and an article just came out. Oh, also to Sister Davis and Brother Davis, Precision Out, e-agriculture, look that up, e-agriculture, Precision Agriculture, and Digital Farming. Those three things should show you where they're going with this fake food. I know you guys are doing a show on that Wednesday. As for the Flint, Michigan, and this report came out and it shows how I can't find it right this second, so I'm gonna freestyle it. Either way, they're pumping 210 million gallons of water. Nestle, a Swiss company, is pumping 210 10 gallons of water in the from out the ground around Flint, Michigan. However, the people in Flint, Michigan are filling up their bathtubs with bottled water to give their kids a bath. So, you know, this whole thing is, it's all their economic system, treaties and things they pass, because Swiss, like I said, Nestle is a Swiss company. How do they have the ability to pump all that water and not have to give it to the people there? Also, NAFTA, with the advent of NAFTA, that whole area, Flint and Detroit, going straight down, those areas are subjected to everything that's happening there. They have to be removed from people, have to be removed from those areas, just like the same thing that's talking with Puerto Rico. They're going to build a superhighway. The Detroit River is a natural canal that connects all the Great Lakes together, which will enhance the trade between U.S. and Canada. I think Canada is the second or third largest trade partner of the United States, China and Mexico. So just to keep that in mind, and I'll mute my line. Thank you. I told you I'll be quick.
All right, everyone. Man, great, great show. We got to get ready to get out of here. And it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. We'll pick up on the topic that I really wanted to share with you all. But before we do that, I think Brother Braggs jumped in earlier and missed out. Brother Braggs, I'm sorry, I was in meetings all morning. That's why I missed your call today. So hit me up.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm going to be free after that. But go ahead, Brother Bragg.
Yeah, I just wanted him to give me that number. Jerry was giving out. Give that number again. I know it started 423.
Jerry, could you get that number out one more time?
Uh-huh. I'll give it to you. It's on 398-1885. So it's 423-398-1885.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, good brother. I'm looking forward to hearing you too, Brother Bragg. Much love to you too.
Yes, sir. Peace to everybody.
No doubt. All right, y'all. So much love, much respect. We'll pick up... In desperate times, we'll pick up what today's show was going to be about. Sorry, some things just ran over. I could not break them. Just couldn't do it. So much love, much respect, and it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. We'll talk to you soon. Peace, Brother Braggs. Chime us out if you can.
Peace. Yes, sir.
Peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.